Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show, The Metaphysical World and More. Today, I have a very great guest on the show. I'm actually very honored to have him on the show, and I'm going to be talking to him, asking him a lot of questions, and we're not going to take any phone calls from the outside because I don't want to break the interview with my guest, whose name is Dr. Eric Pearl. So, hi, Dr. Pearl. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You know, I'm very excited. You'd sent me one your book, and what was really funny is that when I look back through some of my other books, I already had your book, but I had it in the hardback, not the paperback.
So, well, those are the I love the hardbacks.
Yeah, the hardback is pretty good. I've had it for a while, actually, and it's actually pretty amazing. So, Dr. Pearl, is it okay if I call you Dr. Pearl?
You can call me Dr. Pearl, you can call me Eric, you can call me Helen, but most people don't call me Helen.
How about if I call you Dr. Eric? How's that?
You can do what? Yeah, that works too. Hey, you.
In other words, you're going to answer to anything. Anyway,
I'm going to answer to anything because I figure I'm the one on the phone. You got to be talking to me.
That's great. I do have a lot of questions for you, but what I would like for you to do first, Dr. Pearl, is to kind of explain to people a little bit about yourself, you know, what you did up to this point of doing the reconnection and writing the book, and then we'll get into your book, okay?
How long is the show?
It's an hour, but we'll do it quickly here.
We'll expedite it. Okay, I was a chiropractor. Somewhere in my 12th year in practice, a few odd things happened, and the next thing I know, a lamp next to my bed turns itself on in the middle of the night, wakes me up, and I feel people in my house. Now, I cannot tell you how awkward a feeling it is to wake up and think that, you know, or feel someone in your house when they weren't there when you had gone to bed, but let's just say I got up bravely with a knife, a can of pepper spray, and my Doberman pincher and went hunting. After about 20 minutes or so of not finding them and still knowing they were here, I finally decided that I might as well go back to sleep or I'd be a wreck for my patients the next day. So I went back to bed, got up in the morning, was a normal day, went into work, and on that Monday, seven different patients of mine insisted that they felt people in the rooms with us while I was working on them. They said it felt like someone was standing there. Others said it felt like they were walking around the room. Some said it felt like they were running around the room. And two of them actually looked me straight in the eye and said, it felt as if someone was flying around the ceiling. Now, this was my 12th year in practice. No one had ever said anything remotely similar to this to me before. And so you would think that would catch my attention, but at the same time, other patients on that same day are insisting that they can feel my hands before I touch them. And I'm going, oh, yeah, sure, you can. Close your eyes. So they'd close their eyes. And I'd sort of just stand in one place and direct or angle or move my hands to certain areas. And they'd tell me left shoulder, right ankle. So it became a game because it was my office and I could have whatever games I wanted, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And as I would do this, people started reporting seeing colors they'd never seen before and feeling and seeing people in the room with us, and aches and pains started to go away that had been long-term, and then my palms blistered a couple of times, and actually my palm bled once, not like a stigmata, but more as if you just stick it with a little pin or a needle, and the next thing I know, bones are untwisting, and people are getting up out of wheelchairs and running in and showing me laboratory reports that their cancer tumors had vanished, and their visions come back, and their hearing, and not everyone, but a lot of them, enough of them so that word started to get out, and hospitals and universities started calling me to ask me what I'm doing, and my patients were saying, what did you do, what did you do, and I would say nothing and don't tell anyone, which went over about as big as Nancy Reagan saying no to drugs, so everyone started coming in from everywhere going, I'll have what she had, and the next thing I know, people are saying, teach this, and I'm saying, teach it? I mean, I don't even know what it is, how can I teach it, but more and more of my patients would call me and say, you know, when they got home, they walked into their house and their computer or their lamp or their TV or stereo turned itself on, so they turned it off, it turned itself back on again, so they left it on, it turned itself back off. They felt sensations in their hands. They would hold their hands by someone in their family, and the grandfather could walk again after the stroke, and, you know, the grandmother's dropped foot went away, and we began to recognize quite clearly that once you interact with what we call the reconnective healing spectrum, once you interact with this, you then become able to access it and carry it on your own. Now, you do have to interact with it, and that becomes one of the biggest hurdles because, you know, so many people, shall we say, the new age arena mm-hmm. have a huge ego and sense of entitlement, and they think they get away with it by talking about being egoless, and they don't recognize that when they talk about their own becoming, their own being egoless, it's really their ego that's saying all that. But so they feel entitled and disguise it as saying, well, it's all love and it's all universe and it's all the same thing, so I can just access it because I want to. And actually, that's just not true. You can't just sit down and ohm it in. You do have to interact with it. It's like, you know, it's like the ocean. It's like going to the ocean. You can't get wet if you're going to sit in your hotel room the entire time. You actually do have to walk to the ocean. But once you do, you can get equally as wet in it as anyone else. And once you interact with the reconnective healing frequencies, you can access it and carry it equally as well as anyone else. So, so there's your little story.
What do you think was the reason why this started happening for you versus maybe
somebody else? Oh, Lord only knows. And I guess I probably mean that literally at this point. I really, you know, it's a hard one to say because, I mean, I know me. I know my life. You know, I'm not an ascetic. I'm not going to walk around in a loincloth and give up my worldly goods. I can have, you know, 3 martinis in an evening and have a great time, olives and all. My sense of humor can be a little bit caustic. I'm not always the most sensitive, patient person in the world. So I'm not your model spiritual individual. And so I would wonder, I really did wonder, but I guess there are a few things. One, I guess I just have a big mouth and I'm able to talk about things. I'm willing to talk about things because it just seems right. You know, people say to me, oh, you know, you're so brave for coming forward with this. And I guess I'm not really, because to be brave means to do something that you're afraid of. And for me, this just is what you're supposed to do. It never crossed my mind to not do it. I can take a topic such as this, apparently, that's quite out there on the edge, and I guess make it sound sufficiently reasonable and grounded for mainstream people to work with this and look at it. But I think the biggest reason is because I'm not that model, you know, what we think of as the perfect spiritual being, and what this seems to play into or what this seems to demonstrate is concepts of what I would say, what's the word I'm looking for, worthiness. Because we speaking about, you know, new agey type people, I hate that term, but we kind of tend, when we go into things like this, to want to do things to become worthy. You know, I want to eat the special diet. This one's going to become vegetarian. That one's going to become overlactive vegetarian. This one's, you know, going to eat only living foods. This one's a breatharian. You know, we follow this spiritual path. All these things to become worthy, and we're missing it. We're missing it because what we have to get is that we're worthy already simply from being born. So all these other things are simply the colors that we decide to paint with, you know, to paint our canvas with while we're here. We want to paint it with this religion, with this diet, with this belief system, with this, you know, nature or personality, a way of dealing with things. And we change our colors sometimes, but it never changes our worthiness. Our worthiness is already here. So striving towards worthiness becomes an illusion, and anyone who knows me can knock the concept of worthiness right out of the box.
But here's the thing that I find you very interesting, Dr. Pearl, is that at least you're very honest about it, because I do happen to agree with you that a lot of the so-called healers out there have a very big ego. A lot of the psychics out there have a very big ego. I agree with you that you got to let that ego get out of the way if you really are going to accelerate in anything that you do, actually.
As much as we can. And, you know, we can't get rid of the whole thing. And I don't think we were born with an ego because we were supposed to starve the sucker to death either. I think the concept of everything that we're given is to learn its balance.
Mm-hmm. In your book, it was really, there was some really funny parts. One of the funny parts, because I was attuned to Reiki, but I don't do Reiki, okay? I heal people on my own with, you know, just energy. But I've never been truly trained or anything. I just get out of the way, basically. But part of your story was really funny because that was one of the statements that you made. You know, you don't have to be, you know, a trained healer. You don't have to go through that modality or this modality. Just simply get out of your own way. I find that people have a really hard time getting out of their own way only because they allow logic to stay in the way.
Mm-hmm.
You find that might be kind of part of what's going on in the world today?
Well, yeah, that I don't know that I'd say it so much. Well, yeah, I guess it is logic. It's the figuring out, it's the how-tos, the shoulds, the shouldn'ts. These are the various different things that keep us feeling as if we're moving closer to becoming a healer, and yet keep us from becoming a healer. So in other words, the biggest thing really that keeps us from becoming a healer is the step that almost everyone thinks that they need to take, like what you did with Reiki, towards becoming a healer. It's the technique. Mm-hmm. Technique is a funny thing because it's an illusion for us to see beyond. Any true master has always taught that this secret of the gift of technique comes only in its transcendence. You must transcend the technique to receive the gift of mastery. It's like training wheels. You put training wheels on a bicycle. They help you get a little sense of what balance might be, but you will never, ever, ever be able to ride the bicycle until you take them off. And once they come off and you master the bicycle, if you try to add more training wheels back on, you'll fall. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with healing techniques. Healing techniques teach you how to get closer and closer and closer to becoming a healer. So we keep seeing the fact that we're getting closer, and then we continue in the technique, not knowing it keeps us from ever attaining it. For instance, a technique might be, let's say you're standing in a small room and you're standing by one wall and you want to get to the other wall, and you say, well, how do I do it? And someone says, well, here, let me teach you this technique. Step halfway, then step halfway again, then step halfway again. And so each time you do that, you get closer and closer and closer. So it makes you want to master the technique, and you continue doing that, and you continue doing that. And then someone else will say, all right, let's teach you another technique so you can add to that. So step halfway, and then each time you step halfway and then hop a quarter of the way. So then you step halfway and hop a quarter of the way. So now you've got two techniques, so you think you're doing more. And then you step halfway and hop a quarter of the way again. And you keep doing that. Now I want you to know that you can add 30 different techniques, and you could walk away from me, if I'm doing that, for instance, for 40 years and come back later, and I will have become a master, grandmaster at that technique, a title that other people doing that step halfway and hop a quarter of a way forward will have conferred upon me graciously. And I may have taught other people how to do the work as well. And I could master that technique so well, but the one thing I will never do is reach a true state of mastery, only mastery of that technique, because each time I only step halfway in order to actually attain mastery at any level. Technique does have a value for some people who need it and some people actually don't. But for people who need it, technique has a value. Step halfway and begin to experience forward motion. Step halfway again and again, and you eventually will own forward motion. But then there comes a time where you must jettison that technique. You must release it and simply step into where you're going.
Okay. A lot of people, I'm sure, are going, can everybody do this?
Absolutely.
So, and I would tend to agree with you. I mean, I don't think that they can just step into it maybe as easily as you may have, or, you know, go kicking and screaming like you may have. But I really do believe that just about anybody could actually, you know, do this technique. In fact,
you can
teach it.
Very easily. Everyone can very easily do it. And even more easily than you might think, because really, all you have to do is learn to feel it, and that becomes quite a simple thing. And once you feel it, and then you learn how to feel it just, you know, just a little better. Just begin to refine it. Suddenly you find that the people are responding quite visibly right before your eyes in voluntary tiny little muscle movements around, you know, the eyes and the face, larger movements of the fingers, and you see your response and you get to work with it. It's so natural that some people will start to think right away, oh, I must have been doing this all along. And well, actually, no, you weren't. But it's so quick and so automatically ours that we think to attain this level of mastery that it would take more work. And what's surprising is that within just one weekend, you can master this work where you can do anything and everything, not only that I can do, but you will be able to facilitate any level of healing that any person on this planet can facilitate, whether they live in the depths of Brazil or a mountaintop in Tibet.
That's kind of interesting. Does Reconnection, the book that you wrote, The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself, I would think it's pretty important that you make sure that yourself is healed.
Pretty important to say that again?
I would think it's important that you make sure that you also heal yourself.
Well, I don't know how you could make sure of it. There's one thing I've kind of figured out is I don't know if you can make sure of anything. You mean heal yourself before you begin to heal others, or just that it's important that we all come into our own state of healing?
I think it's important that we all come into our own state of healing.
True.
And I think it's important that if we are going to work with others, that we are at least aware of our energy level to make sure that, you know, it doesn't take a toll on ourselves. Or maybe with the way you teach it, it doesn't take a toll.
With what we're doing, see, with once you learn to access this more comprehensive healing spectrum, you don't drain. You don't drain from it because you simply, your presence is a catalyst that allows for other people to have healings. You don't even attempt to determine what that healing it needs to be for the other person or how it should come along. Your presence accesses something. See, the researchers feel that the reconnective healing frequencies are here on the planet possibly for the very first time. I said to them, how can you say something like this? And they said, well, it's kind of easy. This comprehensive spectrum has existed in the universe, but it hasn't been here on Earth. And I said, well, that's not making it easier for me. That's sounding a little stranger. And they said, well, we just have to understand two concepts. The first concept is that, first of all, we were all raised being told that we're three-dimensional beings. And Einstein had been explaining to us since, around the 1950s, that we were four-dimensional. It took until about the year 2000 for science to acknowledge that as being the reality here. The three dimensions we know of are height, width, and depth. The fourth dimension is time. So we're four-dimensional, height, width, depth, and time. We could see height, we could see depth, we could see width, so those were easy for us to understand. It took us a little while until we were able to own the concept of time being our fourth dimension. So that's concept A. And so here we are, let's say, in our little four-dimensional playground in this huge multidimensional universe, and our playground was bounded by height, width, depth, and time. And within our playground, it had a given capacity, and we pretty much filled it with different forms of healing, which were subsets of the energy healing spectrum. One subset would be Reiki, one would be Jurei, one would be Jinshin, or Qigong, or Mahjong, or Beijing, EFG, XYZ, 1, 2, 3, whatever we want to call those techniques, they are each subsets of energy healing. Now, we also thought that energy healing was the healing spectrum because that was also all we were able to have here on the planet. But right now we're going through a shift in time. You hear people talking about time is moving faster. If we speak with the people who are actually doing the research in this, you'll find that faster is not the most accurate term to use because faster is a linear concept. You know, you could say, well, you know, mm-hmm. time is, you know, faster has a beginning, a middle, of an end, and an end, and so time moving faster would be almost as if it goes by so quickly you don't get anything accomplished. In this situation, time is moving much faster, but it's moving faster in all directions. In other words, what's actually happening is that time is expanding. So let's look at this visual again. Here's our playground bounded by height, width, depth, and time. And one side of our playground, the time side, suddenly is expanding. Then what happens to our capacity here? It expands too, and suddenly we're able to receive more than just energy healing, just those subsets of energy healing. We're able to open up and receive the rest of the energy healing along with those subsets, and we found that the spectrum of healing expands now beyond energy into light and information. In other words, it's a broader healing spectrum. Bill Tiller, who's have you heard of William Tiller? He's one of the very mm-hmm. well-known researchers in quantum physics. He's published over 100 papers. He's studied this work. What he talks about is that when we're working with reconnective healing, what's really happening is that many, many, many kinds of energy and light flow through the healer into the recipient. In other words, we're talking about bringing in something that's beyond just what's classically known as energy healing into this broader spectrum of energy, light, and information. As a matter of fact, they did, Bill Tiller did a study, a little experiment, well, actually a good-sized one, on one of our seminars, which we gave last year in Sedona. And what he said that what he came up with from it was quite remarkable, because they found that when they started to monitor the room, which was about 5 hours before I came into it or any of the seminar people came into it, the space began to already be what's termed conditioned. It changed its what's termed a gauge symmetry state, or a balance of the energy in the room. So something happened as if it was in anticipation of the seminar arriving. As they continued to monitor the space, they found that this increase in energy lasted for a few days later, and it was such a huge increase in excess energy, they said that for that to happen on this plane of existence, a normal space would have had to have been over 300 degrees in centigrade, and yet the temperature didn't change, because this is working on a field that's beyond energy.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Also, you talk about the DNA, you know, reconnecting the DNA. Can you maybe explain that to our listeners a little bit better, just in case some of them have got your book, which I'm sure they have, but kind of explain to the ones maybe that have not gotten the book how that tends to work, if you can?
Well, I don't know how
okay.
it tends to work. We really don't know how, but what seems to happen, as best as we can understand, is that some reconnecting and or restructuring of the DNA takes place. And a lot of the theorizing behind this, at least on one level, seems to equate DNA with computer software. In other words, see, I don't like the word healing, because healing tends to imply that we have to get better from something. We're always healing as if there's been some damage. The thing is healing is more than just getting up out of a wheelchair. Healing is our evolution as human beings. And when you interact with the reconnective healing frequencies, it is very, very, very common that the person that you're working with on the table, if you learn how to do this work, will report seeing and experiencing other dimensions, other beings, other smells, other sights, being somewhere that is often described as more real, not awake and not asleep, more real than either. And some of the explanation to this is, again, what we're able to perceive. So let's say, for instance, you've got a computer at home. Your computer has, you know, some basic software in it, and you're able to access information that is in your computer from the software, and your computer is also able to then access information that's out in the internet somewhere, wherever that internet thing is, right? Now, what happens if you upgrade your computer software is you've got more information within the computer that you're able to access, and you're able to better access what's out there in the internet. We see our brains kind of work the same way. We were raised, see, this is the problem with knowledge. Knowledge is always changing. You know, we may have gotten, you know, 100s in all of our tests of all this knowledge that we accrued, and suddenly, oops, you know, sorry, it's wrong. And we were raised being told that the memory, you know, is in one part of the brain, and learning's in another part of the brain, and this is in another part of the brain. And that's just simply not true, as we know today. First of all, there's a field. You may have heard people used to speak of an etheric field. That field was so strong, science tried to kill it twice. Twice they disproved the etheric field, and guess what? It's back again. But science has to save face today, so they've changed the name of it, and now they refer to it as ZPF, or zero-point field. And as a matter of fact, there's a wonderful book that talks about this called The Field by Lynn McTaggart, and where she's spent a lot of time interviewing the quantum physicists and the researchers involved in this, and then translating their work into a language we fondly refer to as English so the rest of us can understand it. And she has a second book called The Intention Experiments also, which is wonderful. But this field is everything. In other words, everything in the field, all of our... It's information, it's vibration, it's light, it's frequency. This is how the body heals, this is how the body communicates, this is how we interact and communicate within ourselves and with each other. So in other words, you are a slightly denser portion of the field than what exists outside of your body, and then I'll become a denser portion of the field here, and we'll have interaction that way, which will explain on certain levels how we can interact with each other when we're not touching, but we're in the same space, and sometimes when we're in a different part of the world. Mm-hmm. And what happens with this field is that most of us can access a certain bandwidth within it. That's just the normal human bandwidth of what we've been able to access. There's more to it. And people who are gifted, true psychics and, you know, mediums and others, they're able to access or listen to just a little bit more of that bandwidth. Now, let's think of our brains as our hardware, and our DNA as our software.
Okay.
So our brains don't just access what's within them. They also access this field, just like our computer accesses the internet. But what if our DNA was our software? What if somehow or other the interaction with the reconnective healing spectrum allows for our DNA to restructure or to reconnect? In other words, gives us a software upgrade. That appears to be what can explain the multidimensional consciousness and reality interaction that we begin to have once we're experiencing reconnective healing. In other words, we seem to be upgrading who we are from our very essence. Healing is evolution, and yet we like the word healing because it attracts so many people, and I don't think as many people would partake of it if we hung out shingles that said, come get your DNA reconnected here.
No, they'd probably go, huh?
Huh?
They'd probably sit there and go, huh, what are you talking about?
Right, except for the dyslexics, which would go, huh?
Yeah, they go, huh? Your sense of humor is great, by the way. You know, a lot of people get very, very serious, and then they get all bogged down with that. But yours is actually really good. I have to commend you for that.
Oh, well, thank you. I think we learn that way. We open up to discovering concepts when we can laugh. I remember having teachers in high school inflicted upon us, who would, you know, the type who would sit there in front of the room and go, it's not my job to entertain you, it's my job to teach you. And of course they were flat out wrong, and we knew it at the time, because if you are not willing or able to entertain, you cannot hold someone's attention, and you are a sub-adequate teacher at that point.
Mm-hmm. And I really agree with that. I experienced that in school a lot when I was in school.
Right.
The book that you have out, The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself, where can people, you know, purchase it from?
Oh, God, anywhere. They can go right on to Amazon.com if they want. They can go into pretty much any major bookstore and get it. And obviously, if you've got, you know, metaphysical or spiritual bookstores in your area, you know, they always have copies of it.
Do you have a website?
Yes, you can.
Would you like to
give
that out to my listeners?
Sure,
please?
Sure. The website is www.thereconnection.com. It's just the same as the book title. The book title is The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself, and the website is thereconnection.com. There's a toll-free number people can call, which is 888-374-2732, 888-374-2732, which actually is 888-ERIC-PEARL, except I have two extra letters in it, you know, in my name that will fit in the numbers, so it really spells 888-ERIC-P, and we don't want anyone to know that, so.
We won't tell anybody. Just
because
this is going out all over the place, we won't tell anybody,
no,
okay?
No, no, no. It's just you know, it's like Joan Rivers. Hey, you know, can we talk?
Yeah, we'll just keep it between the two of us, okay?
Right.
Now, you go and you teach people how to do this.
All over the world, about 40 weeks a year.
Okay,
yeah, the
now,
book's in 24 languages. The Reconnection's in 24 languages now.
That's great.
And we're going to be in Chicago, I think,
okay.
Soon.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to come see you. I'm going to come meet you face to face and just pick on you.
Uh-oh.
Like never been
that's Celebrate Your Life. when is that Celebrate Your Life thing? Isn't it, it's this month, right? Like the 22nd through the 25th?
Yeah. So that'll be cool that you're going to be here in Chicago. So is it like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday?
Quick,
Sunday?
Tell Oprah.
Tell Oprah. we'll get it out. We'll say, hey, we're having this dude come out here, and we need to have other people know what he does. How's that?
That works for me.
So when they come now, do they come like on a full weekend? Like what's the time frame for?
Well, here's what happens. Now, sometimes I'll do one-night events, and one-night events are usually for about 3 hours, and depending on the venue where they're held, you know, sometimes it's, I don't know, 6,000 people, and sometimes it's 300 or 400 people, so it just depends. Then what happens, and on those things, and I think I'll be doing something like that at Celebrate Your Life. I'm not exactly sure what specifically will be happening at that event. But when we do that, what I'll do is I'll give the history of how this came about. We'll go into detail about the different research that's being done on it, theory and concept as best as we understand it. And then we'll bring up volunteers from the audience to do demonstrations of the healing so you can actually see it. Because, you know, in seeing, we, you know, it takes us beyond anything that we could study, plan, or hope for. You simply, you know, once you see it, you know it. It's just happening. And for people who want to learn the work, then what we do is I'll teach all day Saturday and Sunday, and it's a working seminar. I mean, I'll tell you, right now, do not come to that seminar if you think that you want to just sit around, hold hands, om, and sing Kumbaya, my Lord, because it ain't going to happen, you know. This is my personality, and as many people might attest, I don't get prettier. I'm focused on the work. What we'll do is we'll have one massage table for approximately every four people who attend. I will demonstrate a level of the work in front of the room, and then we'll all go to the tables in groups of two or groups of four. And what'll happen at that point is we'll walk around. I'll walk around to each of the tables, and so will my teaching assistants, and we'll help you adjust or refine the movement of your hands to show you how you can feel certain things better. It's sort of like we'll give you dissolving stitches for technique. You know, we'll say, hold your hand this way, and this will help you feel it. And now allow your hand to float over here, and you'll see the person's body start to physically respond or move. You'll see the fingers or their toes involuntarily move, and the facial muscles change. And what happens is it shows you how to feel for something and then find it. And after that's over, after the seminar is over, then we say to you, now let's go over the technique. Because they're dissolving stitches. If you keep your stitches in after surgery, you will eventually get an infection. You know, you're not going to heal well until the stitches become, you know, are removed. And that's just something we have to understand. As a matter of fact, now that I think about it, I believe that at Celebrate Your Life, we're also doing, right after that, I think it's on the Monday, we're doing a one-day teaching seminar, which will be a very condensed form. It won't be the full weekend. It'll be like the level one portion. We normally call that weekend a level 1-2. Really just because of my own insecurities. When I first started to teach this years and years ago, I figured, oh, it's brand new. Someone might not want to, you know, come out and stay for 2 days. So I called Saturday level one and Sunday level two, and I just never changed the name. So we're going to be doing 1 day of that 2 day weekend for people on Monday the 25th. And you can register for that, I believe, through our office. You can sign up through the reconnection.com or through the toll-free number I gave you, or you can register for that through Celebrate Your Life directly. And Celebrate Your Life, their website is on mishkaproductions.com, M-I-S-H-K-A, mishkaproductions.com. So either way, they're having a lot of wonderful speakers there. Brian Weiss, Neil Donald Walsh will be there, John Holland, Carolyn Mace, Cheryl Richardson, a lot of people will be there. It should be a wonderful, wonderful event.
Good. No, it sounds really good. Also, going back to your book, there's a couple areas you have. One area you have is called setting the tone. And in that particular area, you're talking about people letting go of their own rituals, basically. Mm. And some of them are kind of, they're fun, because I have a lot of fun with stuff like this, because I don't really think that you need all of this stuff either. And then your first one was flowers, and it says to keep away ghosts.
Okay. Well, I mean, we do a lot of silly things. We put flowers in the room to keep ghosts away. I mean, how are flowers going to keep a ghost away unless it's got rose fever, you know? I mean, and why? Why? See, what this is about, what we do, I don't know when I got included in this group. I suddenly realize I'm using we's. But anyway, what we do is we tend to do things that are disguised as love, which are actually fear-based, and we don't get it. You know, flowers sound pretty. Put flowers in the room. But the reason you're told to do that is to keep ghosts and spirits away. Move your hand in a clockwise direction because it brings in good energy. And we're told to do that, but what are we really telling ourselves? Subliminally, don't move your hands counterclockwise or bad energy will come in. I think Jin Shin teaches you can move as far as 3 inches off the body. Whoop-de-doo. What are they really saying? Don't move any more than 3 inches off the body. And you see, energy healing had certain weaknesses and frailties. You know, you had to take off your leather and your jewelry, and you needed to do things to help it. But when we access the reconnective healing spectrum, which is a comprehensive spectrum of energy, light, and information, we're now finally accessing source in this. And jewelry and leather won't, you know, interfere with it. Mother, Father, God's not floating around in a cloud somewhere going, I'd really like Nancy to have a healing, but that necklace, you know, it's just not going to interfere. You don't have to worry about how far you move away. And every time we try to protect ourselves, bring in the white flame, you know, and envelop ourselves in the white flame, it sounds beautiful. But when we use
our
protection.
Dr. Pearl, the last part that you said, the phone was like kind of strange. So
oh, isn't that funny? The white flame part?
No.
When we bring in the white flame, you know, we protect ourselves in a white flame sometimes. And we think that that's beautiful, but we're doing that for protection. And every time we do something for protection, what we're actually bringing into the equation, what we're actually introducing into the equation is fear, because there's something we have to be afraid of if we need to protect ourselves. So then suddenly we start to look for more protection. And what do we find out? There's a purple flame. So now we have two of them. Wait, there's a gold one. Well, then which one should we use? Well, maybe the gold one's reflective, so we should put it on the outside to protect the other two. Well, if it needs to protect the other two, what good are they? Maybe we should put it on the inside in case it penetrates them. All of a sudden, when we start to call in this entity and that entity and the other entity, and we start shaking off negative energy, which, who are we to say that it's negative to begin with? When you in a bad sense, when you interact with someone in a healing situation, should you be so fortunate as to have anything left over from it on you, it's the residue from the beauty, the healing experience. Much like when we sleep all night with that special person in our lives, and we get up and go to work in the morning, and maybe we reach up to get something off of a shelf at the office, and we catch just a little hint of their scent on us, and we get to re-experience that love that we associate with that person. We don't need to go alcohol that stuff off of us, if it's something awful.
Mm-hmm. No, I like the way that you're...
We're just involved in fear-based in the rituals, and we must transcend the fear to get there. And, you know, sometimes we're given concepts of fear that we can't even recognize, and that's the problem. For instance, people will say, well, as long as you have faith, the healing will come about. As long as you believe in it hard enough. Guess what? You don't have to, and you're better off not believing in it and not having strong faith. And I know that this is a difficult concept for some people who are listening to understand, but when we have faith, when we hope, when we believe, we're keeping ourselves just a little fraction away from knowing. I mean, for instance, when you're wearing blue jeans, do you hope you're wearing them or do you know it? Do you have faith that you're wearing them or do you know it? Do you believe real hard that you're wearing them or do you know it? There's a difference. And faith, hope, and belief are, in essence, techniques towards attaining that state of oneness, that state of knowingness, because as we believe, we get closer. As we hold the faith, we get closer. As we, you know, as we step halfway and step halfway, we get closer. But in order to actually be in that state of oneness, we need to transcend the faith, transcend the hope, and step into knowingness.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is really very important, because that knowingness makes all the difference in the world. Have you noticed that, well, I'm sure you have.
No, have you?
No. Well, I have to ask you this strange question anyway. It's not so strange for me, and I already know the answer, but I think the people who are listening need to also hear the answer from you. Are you finding that a lot of, let's call them normal MDs, are wanting to talk with you or wanting them to have you show them what you do?
Oh, absolutely. I would say quite often up to 20% of the attendees at our seminars are in mainstream healthcare, doctors, nurses, physical therapists, medical researchers. We used to think that the AMA was the spokesperson for doctors, you know, and we don't always understand. The AMA is a trade union. And, it used to be the second largest trade union, the second and third largest trade unions in the country were the AMA and the APA, American Medical and American Pharmaceutical Association. Steel was number one. I don't know that it still is. But only about 50% of medical doctors belong to that. And today, just as patients, you know, are no longer buying the concept of doctor's orders, MDs are not necessarily following a formal party line, because we are evolving into a time where we allow ourselves to be free individual thinkers, and medical doctors and chiropractors and osteopaths, we are all bringing a new independence and a consciousness about healing into our practices. As one doctor used to teach, stop being the doctor and start being the healer. Because the healing disciplines that we follow, I believe, are truly just excuses for us to be the healers that we are. Even the old country doctor, while he's sitting there in his chair, you know, across the desk from you, writing the prescription and looking up and giving you that smile, is already in the healing state. It has nothing to do with Squibb Pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm. I don't take any kind of medicine, actually. I have a hard time believing in a lot of the medicine that they have out on the market today that it can actually be good for somebody. And I would think that a lot of the doctors would like to find a fresher way to be able to help their patients. So that's, you know, the question is, you know, are the MDs out there kind of excited about what they're learning from you? Or are they, you know, coming forth so that they can? I mean, all of those things are pretty important, I think, for, you know, people who go to doctors all the time.
I know doctors and medical students who go to a lot of conventions, and they say, God, your book, they couldn't keep it in the store. Mm-hmm. So this is practiced by doctors in hospitals and in universities, and in private practices, and it's studied in hospitals and universities. We've got a lot of work going on. Dr. Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona has been doing work with this. So is William Tiller. We're looking at maybe Jackson Memorial Hospital is talking about maybe doing a clinical study with us, a few other hospitals. And I speak at hospitals and medical schools and chiropractic colleges all around the world, not just here in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, I think is really important. Is there any age that you think cannot be worked on? I mean, how young can a person be, or how old can a person be?
Age has nothing to do with this. Time has nothing to do with this. And I'll tell you this too, we've actually had just a handful over the years of kids as young as 7 to 12, with their parents, of course, attend some of the seminars to learn how to do this work. See, that's the gift of this. It's not about, you know, coming to me to receive it. It's about learning how, interacting with it, carrying it, and learning to be able to facilitate this work yourself so that the world can begin to recognize that we no longer have to travel, you know, to some remote part of the planet to find some special healer, that, you know, that we can access anything and everything that they can do as quickly and as cleanly without the expense, without the time. There's no religion to it, so we don't have to, you know, buy into any of the rituals. I mean, this is spiritual healing. I don't want to call it spiritual healing because that makes you think, you know, slap someone in the forehead, fall over backwards, pass around the collection plate. But it's healing with spirit, meaning there's an intelligence to the universe. Call it God, call it love, call it, you know, intelligence, call it source. I don't think a rose cares if you call it a petunia. But something causes trees to grow up and roots to grow down, and then children to be born with two eyes and one nose, and whatever we want to call that. I like the word of God. You want another one, knock yourself out. But there's that intelligence, and all we're really doing is finding a flow with it. And that's how the healings come about so readily, as we find this way to just listen with a different sense. We don't have to do things anymore. There are no rituals, there are no methods, there's no trying to remember to do this symbol in the air or move in this direction or make sure that you shake things off or spray yourself with alcohol. There's nothing to do. You don't have to bring in 70% of this from the earth and 30% from the heavens. Simply, we rise beyond what I would refer to as the I, me, it's all about me healing approach. We rise beyond the doing, transcend the technique into the state of becoming the observer and the observed. You know, we're taught all these things to do, probably because schools in healing even couldn't exist without trying to teach you things to do. It's very, you know, would be very difficult for them to say, you know, just come to us for the next 3 years, pay us $40,000 and just be. So they teach you how to do instead. And then they teach us silly things, well-intended as they were, I'm sure. Like, for instance, come in and feel for the area of density, you know, or you know, blockage in the field, and then remove it. And when you remove that area of density, the energy starts to flow freely again. And this sounds good on the surface, unless and until you actually look at what you're doing, at the concept. For instance, let's say a soccer player twists his knee. What happens? Well, the knee swells up. It gets warm. If it breaks some blood vessels, the color might change, become a little red. There's pain. The inflammation limits the motion of it. This is the body's natural response, the intelligence of the human body, demonstrating the intelligence that exists in the universe, actually. And so, in other words, the pain is the knee picking up the body's telephone line, calling up to the brain saying, help, 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 there's damage down here. And the brain says, okay, gotcha. I'll send, you know, the inflammation and the swelling and the parameter and the pain so you don't push past and overwork the knee, and I'll stay in the phone, and the fluids will flow in and out with you until the area heals, and then we'll let the inflammation and the pain go away, and you'll be good as new. Now, that's intelligence. What's not so intelligent is what sometimes we tend to do. We'll take that player off of the field, throw them on some kind of a massage table in the back, get some artificial electrical current, such as ultrasound or something, and artificially short-circuit the telephone system. So the knee is still hollering, help, 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 but the brain doesn't hear anything, and more muffled than, so it figures, well, the communication's over, and it hangs up. Meanwhile, we then come in and we artificially get rid of the swelling and the inflammation, give them some painkillers, send them back out in the field. He feels good, but the knee's not healed, and nor is the hip from last week, or the shoulder will be from next week. And so we don't know why our athletes have no career after the age of 30. Now, the fact is, we know that that swelling, that heat, the altered function, the redness, the pain in the knee serves a purpose until it completes itself. So what I want to know is, when one of these healing school graduates comes in and feels around and finds an area of density and moves it out of the way, what makes them think that it doesn't belong there? When we remove the swelling from the knee, yeah, the blood flows more freely. When they remove the density from that field, yeah, the energy might appear to flow more freely, but did the density serve its purpose yet? In other words, what I hear, and it helps if you hear it in that person's voice, when someone says, I came in and I smoothed out, you know, the aura, and I balanced the chakras, and I removed the density, what you hear them saying is, gee, God, looks like you've done an amazing job with pretty much the whole universe up until now, but you missed a spot, and you need me and my limited educated intelligence and unlimited ego to come in and take over for you.
I know exactly where you're coming from with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Could
when
you do
we
me
become,
a favor?
Sure.
Go ahead.
When we allow ourselves to become the observer and the observed, and recognize that maybe there is an intelligence in the universe that knows what perfection is, then when we observe, the universe decides to display that beauty for us, and in our being so honored as invited into the home of this healing to witness this, our consciousness rises, meaning the light within us rises, meaning we vibrate at that higher level of light, and nothing denser than light has anything then to hold on to, which includes most health challenges, and therefore we become more healed, as you talked about earlier in the program. And when we carry this consciousness into our next interaction with the next person that we are there to help, then they pick up on that vibration, and something inside of them goes, I remember this. This is me vibrating healthy. I think I'll do it again. And anything more complicated than that is designed to sell you something.
Mm-hmm. And again, I truly agree with all of that. What I want you to do before we run out of time, because we're just about out of time, is to please give out the information again where people can get a hold of you.
Sure.
Website, phone number.
The book is called The Reconnection, Heal Others, Heal Yourself. It's on Amazon.com and most any major bookstore. The website is the same, TheReconnection.com, RECONNECTION.com. The toll-free phone number is 888-374-2732, 888-374-2732. That's good anywhere in North America. And otherwise, the local number is 323-960-0. 0012. And all this information is on thereconnection.com.
Okay, and that's real important. You know, our time is like really up. But, you know, it's been really, really fun just listening to you. And again, I really enjoy your sense of humor. Others might know,
well, thank
but I
you.
Certainly did. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing you when you get into Chicago, because we may end up doing a face-to-face interview with you also.
That's
so
what
did
I'm
you know that? Yeah.
That's what
so
I'm told.
Kind of excited about that.
Me too.
So I can't wait. But anyway, thank you for being my guest for today. And
thank
I
you
look
for
forward to
me.
Seeing you when you're here. And I'd like to thank you, of course, the listening audience, because I think some of the information that we're giving out would really be great for all of you to kind of take note. And if you get the chance to go to one of his seminars, Dr. Eric Pearl's seminar, by all means do that. Get his book. It's really, it's written very well, and it has humor in it and everything else, and it's great. So anyway, thank you again, Dr. Pearl, and may God bless everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.